I'm Tanzina Vega, back with you here in New York. It's been about 5 months since I started with The Takeaway, and when I started thinking about the job, there were some themes that emerged for what I wanted to accomplish with this program. There were three gaps that I feel that we really need to work on in this country and in our media coverage, and they are the wealth gap, the truth gap, and the empathy gap. I talked about all of these a few weeks ago with two prominent activists at the Prosperity Summit in Washington, D.C., the feminist writer, thinker, and leader Gloria Steinem and the civil rights activist DeRay McKesson. And I want to play part of that conversation today because some of the most meaningful pieces of it were about sustaining hope and optimism as we struggle to close those gaps. I know a lot of Americans today are feeling discouraged as they think about social justice and civil rights and the future of our country. So what do we tell them about how to carry on while they fight for change? I asked DeRay and Gloria.
I would say the first thing I would do is listen to them. I mean, you know, because listening is maybe the most revolutionary thing we can possibly do. If just in the beginning we remember not to look up all the time, but look at each other, we'll be part of the way there. Because we all have, you know, friends and people who trust us and adversaries and things we can do internally. And I think part of the despair comes from a case of the shoulds. You know, what should I do as opposed to every day getting up and thinking I'm going to do everything I can and I'm going to speak the truth and I'm going to reach out to anybody who needs me in the moment and take it from the bottom up instead of the top down.
I'd say two things come to mind. One is that the status quo thrives on people not believing that they have power. Like, that is one of the ways that, like, we get into the musical chairs with the status quo instead of actually changing the room. Is that people, one of the beautiful things about the protests is that in city and city and city, all of a sudden you found people who were like, I got it, right? Like, I have power, I get it, I can shut this down, I can speak this truth. Like, you saw people all over the country realize that they could do something different, and they always had the power, they just didn't know. So when I give people advice, it's like, you know that you have more power than you think. I think about being in the school system is that I used to manage all staffing, and this one parent one day, she emails and she's like, hey, my kid's classroom has 40 kids. It's like a first grade class. It's a lot of kids in first grade. And, you know, we have 200 schools. I didn't hear that from a principal. I didn't hear from the teacher. I heard it from this random parent. Random parent emails the superintendent. Superintendent emails me. We literally redo the staffing in that elementary school because of this one random email. She'll never know it was her email that changed the staffing in the school, but it was it, right? And part of that is like her believing that like her voice actually mattered in some way. And like, I think that has to be a part of how we think about this.
How do we sustain movements? Black Lives Matter and a lot of the movement that came out of Ferguson, and feminism has had multiple waves and multiple, and so has the broader fight for civil rights. I remember a dark time in the 90s when feminism and civil rights were sort of not the issue in college campuses, unlike today. How do you sustain interest in a movement? I remember, you know, telling someone in college, well, there's a Center for Women's Concerns, and there was a joke about what women were concerned about, right, at the time. And yet today, every young woman that I know is proudly calling herself a feminist. And even going beyond that. And there's been this real embrace of Black Lives Matter and other civil rights politics. I wonder if we're going to see this level of sustained engagement, or will we have is this just an ebb and flow of movement building?
I think what helps us is to see the connections among all these things, right? All the movements and our aspirations are totally all connected. I mean, Trayvon Martin, okay. Zimmerman had been abusing women and had been convicted of abusing women before. If he had been interrupted in this habit, you know, it might have been different. As it was, even in his trial for murdering Trayvon Martin, he was not, that evidence was not admitted. So it's just an example of how these things are connected. That actually violence in the household, violence against females usually, but sometimes against men, certainly violence against kids, is the biggest predictor of all other violence, but we don't connect it. Our police forces, for instance, has, in general, police families have four times the rate of domestic violence that families in general have. If we address that, not to get rid of these guys, but to, you know, to treat it, to understand it, to stop it, there would not be so much racist police violence either.
In general, I think about like the movement has to grow as people grow and vice versa, that that has to be a part of the work. There was a point in my life where I literally like, I drove to Ferguson, didn't know anybody in the street. The first thing I ever did was make these amazing sandwiches in somebody's living room. Like, I quit my job, slept in the car on the side of the road, like all these things. And that was a point in my life where I was like, that was, I could do it. I was ready to do that in that way. And now I'm in the world differently. And like the movement, there should still be place for all of us as we grow. So I think that that is a part of it. You know, Cleo Wade, who's a mutual friend of both of ours, she always talks about activism is just organized storytelling. And part of what we have to do is like tell the story in a way that mobilizes people and creates on-ramps and off-ramps. It's why when I talk about the police, I believe we can live in a world without the police. I know that some people, that's just not the way to enter into the conversation with them. They're like, if I start there, people are like, ah, and they're like, but what I say to them, I'll say things like, you know, in California, there's a law that literally says that any investigation of an officer that lasts more than a year can never result in discipline, regardless of the outcome. You can love the police and think that doesn't make sense, right? In Cleveland, the rule says that all officer disciplinary records are destroyed every 2 years. You can love the police and that don't make sense, right? 100 years ago, we were slitting people's wrists and letting them bleed out and calling that healthcare, and that was not a good solution. And I think that we're in a similar place with how we think about safety and policing today. But I get that like part of the choir is like finding like that hymn that people can hum first so they can learn how to sing later.
Should we, well, I'm sure I know your answer, DeRay, but should we be hopeful? And what gives us cause to be hopeful right now?
I know because of your podcast, even though we're just meeting for the first time today, that you too, like me, are a hopeaholic.
Hopeaholic.
Right? Okay, so, because hope is a form of planning. You know, if your hopes weren't real inside you, you couldn't even hope them.
Right.
So, what to not to be hopeful is to be defeated immediately. It's that hope and vision of what could be, even if it's 5 minutes from now, or you know, if it's 5 years, or whatever it is, that gives us the strength to proceed toward it. So, you know, do I know what's going to happen? No, I don't know what's going to happen. But some, I mean, hope is absolutely crucial. And we so need younger people because they are mad as hell because they know it should be better, right? So, you know, it's just, hope is a vision of what you're going to do the next day and the next and what this person might respond. And I'm all for hopeaholism. And I'm so grateful that both you're angry and you're hopeful. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'd say simply, I'm proud to be in a community of so many people who are ready to do something about the things in the world. And I think about being on the stage today, it's like, what does it mean to not live in somebody's shadow, but to live in their glow? Mm. And I think that that is like the best of what we can do with each other.
Gloria Steinem is a prominent feminist author and activist, and DeRay McKesson is an author and civil rights activist whose new book is called On the Other Side of Freedom, The Case for Hope. And you can find video of our entire conversation from the 2018 Prosperity Summit on our website, thetakeaway.org.